Welcome to Gluck Radio. This is Becky. Today we're going to be sitting down with Dr. Gluck again. And we were trying to think about shows we could put together that would be relatable to everyone. And Dr. Gluck and I were thinking, and we thought, who's the one person that we all talk to on a daily basis? Ourselves. So we had the idea that we could maybe go over some lies that we tell ourselves and get some of Dr. Gluck's best tips about why they're maybe not the best thing that you should be doing. So Dr. Gluck's here with me, and Dr. Gluck, welcome.
It is a pleasure to always be with you. You are such an integral part of the show.
It's good to flip the table on you.
I know.
So let's dive right in. Why do people lie to themselves? Like, do they make it feel better, or what? Why?
People lie in order to do two things. One is to protect their own fears and to protect their own anxiety. The other is to control another person. Let's say you went over to my house and for dinner, and you stepped in. I gave you a hug and a kiss, and gave you the best wine, and served you a 7-course perfect meal. And then you left, and someone said, oh, I heard you went over to Dr. G's for dinner. How did he treat you? And you say, Becky, I was over there for 4 hours, and he never even offered me a glass of water. Ah. Now, mind you, I didn't offer you water. Did you lie?
That's a lie of exclusion. I mean.
No, right. So it's a lie because the intent of the question is, how did he treat you?
Right.
So you could tell the truth and lie, and you could lie and tell the truth.
But everyone has their own perspective on life, too.
Correct. So we went over some of the lies that people tell themselves, and the reason for that is this, is one is to either cope with their anxiety or to cover up their guilt or to avoid, because the biggest problem people have, Beck, is why people come, is they procrastinate.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm guilty of that, too.
And very often the procrastination, people say, I have a fear of success. No one has a fear of success. They only have a fear of failure. You can't commit suicide jumping out of a basement. It has to be a high window.
Right.
Okay. So what I want, let's do this. Let's go over some of the lies that we said people tell themselves, and I'm going to elaborate it.
Sounds great. Okay. Sounds great. So one that I've heard people say a lot is that they can do it all by themselves. They can fix their problems on their own. They don't need any help from anyone else.
This is probably one of the most entrenched lies. Now, let me preface it by saying that a tremendous amount of psychology and psychiatry and social work are people who have more problems than their patients and go into it just to fix their own problems, and they're not very stable. Okay. So anyone going to someone who helps them, if they don't feel that there's tremendous competency, if they don't feel that the person themselves is happy and has a life exemplary of a person who has their stuff together, you should run to the hills. Okay, so let me say that. But the other part of the problem is that we believe, our brain believes the story that it tells itself every single day. And the idea that a person could, in fact, unravel their own neurotracking, their brain's own, it has this highway that it goes to every day, and the fact that they could take a different route is simply absurd. People don't grow up, Becky, they grow old. Growing up is when you have another force acting against you, and someone who could say, wait, what you just said is just not true, and here's why, and here's where it came from, and here's the thought process that you need to change to get better results. People don't change by themselves.
Right. You need a reality check. It's checks and balances.
You need a reality check. So, yes, you need to go to someone who's competent, who could actually look at your life more objectively and help you make the changes. People don't change. They just repeat old behavior.
Right. And sometimes you just need one person to smack you out of it and say, listen, clearly this isn't working for you. Let's try something new.
Absolutely. And I get a kick out of when I coach couples who have been married for a long time. And one of them will say, we've been married for 25, 30 years and she started to change. And I don't like that. And I'm thinking.
Tough.
Exactly. That's where she's upset at you. You're supposed to change every day for the better. You know, so his surprise is that after 30 or 40 years, you wanted something different. Okay.
Yeah.
They went to this is a true story. They went to the same diner on date night for 35 years. The same diner.
Oh, my God.
He ordered the same thing, and he wanted to split it with her. And she said, you know, enough already. And that became what drove them to my office.
Oh, my God.
True story.
Wow. Well, if that's their biggest problem, then...
that's the tip of the iceberg, darling.
Well, speaking of being with other people or trying to succeed in life, what about... I know this is a common one where people think that they don't have to compromise, that the world is their oyster and nothing's ever going to get in their way.
That's a good. So let's look at the lie. The lie is I don't have to change for anyone.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's absolutely true if you live at an island. Okay. and there's only you.
Right.
But whenever you have two people in a room, right now we have me, you, and John, our engineer. Hi, John. Say hello.
Hi.
Hey, we could hear you. Whenever you have more than two people in a room, you have politics.
Absolutely.
Okay. There's the politics of a relationship. There's the politics of friendship. There's the politics of work. And if you cannot be a political person, then you're going to be seen as a self-centered, narcissistic, arrogant person who no one wants to deal with. So compromise doesn't mean you compromise your core values.
Or your root of who you
are. Or the root of your identity. But it does mean that you realize that the world doesn't revolve around you.
Right.
And that in order to interact with another person, you can't always win 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You can't always win. You have to bend and realize that the world, the great cities of the world were built out of compromise, right, out of people who knew how to bend. And whether or not people like it, that's what politics is, that's what government is, that's what relationships are. They're about compromise.
And relationships with other people are fluid, and that's the only way that they work. So if I'm talking to someone who does think that the world revolves around them, sometimes to get what you need out of them or just to have a good conversation with them, you have to play into that. You have to sort of be a chameleon to interact with everybody.
Absolutely. You know, when in New York City, most people don't realize this. When you live on the top floor, the ones who do live on top floors of large buildings, and it's windy, the building sways.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why does the building sway? Because if it was built not to bend, it would break.
Fall over, right.
Right. And people who are not built to bend break.
But what about another lie? What about people who say, I don't care. I don't care what they think of me. I don't care if I get along with anyone. I'm me.
Okay. When people say they don't care, it's either one of two things. It's either that they're sociopathic, okay, and they really don't care, okay, mm-hmm, and they're dangerous, or they care so much they're afraid to admit that they do care. Okay. Every day we get up and we groom to some extent,
mm-hmm,
okay, and if we would just get up and stay in the house all day, we would look different. We'd be hanging out in our pajamas or PJs or nothing,
right,
and our hair wouldn't be combed, and we might wait to brush our teeth. But when most people get up, they dress because unconsciously they do care what people think. Now, some people could say, I am not overly affected by people's opinion. I take it into account, but I don't let it become my guiding light. That's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone says, I don't care, it means that they have not entered into the reality that life is about making people around you feel comfortable and working together in order to achieve a common goal.
Right. And sometimes those people, some of the most narcissistic people that I've ever met in my life are the ones who care way too much about what other people think about them. And they're so insecure about it that they have to build themselves up and how great they are.
Absolutely. You know, when someone protests too much or they tell you, they just tell you so much how brave they are for endless amounts of time.
Oh, yeah.
Or they tell you, you know, that they don't care what people think of their looks, especially their long flowing hair and their small eyes and their,
yeah, perfectly,
you know,
groomed.
Exactly. And it doesn't really bother me. You know, no, it's bullshit.
Actions speak louder than words.
Right.
Yeah. Now, moving on to something else, I think that something that is really common with people is that they think that their past rules them. And a common lie people tell themselves is that they can't move forward with their life because they had a bad childhood or something happened to them in the past that seems to have a hold on them.
Becky, that's probably the most important one. So let's stay on that for a second. You know, there are people who allow their past, you know, when you are a child, your frontal lobe, well, the rational cognitive brain, isn't fully wired to about 18 to 25. Mm-hmm. So what you're really entering into life with is a lot of emotions without a tremendous amount of rational function. And everyone has come from some level of dysfunction. There are two healthy families in the world. They both live in Switzerland and they don't talk to each other. Everyone else comes from a little bit of dysfunction to extreme dysfunction. But the reason people use these lies that I have been damaged by my childhood and therefore it's over is because they are afraid of the challenge of really having to take responsibility for their life. I don't care where you came from. I don't care how much you were abused. We all have stories. And in my generation, being beat is what everyone did. We were all beat.
Oh, yeah. Okay? My dad says, you know, his grandma used to chase him around with a belt.
A belt,
the
whatever
table.
They had. That was, now kids, they yelled at and it's, oh, my God, my parents yelled at me. Yelled at you. Okay? The teachers used to bang your head against the wall in public school.
Oh, yeah. My nana used to get her knuckles wrapped by the nuns.
I had one teacher who hit me over the head with a chair.
Oh, my God.
You know, so meaning this is not what – this is not an excuse to not perform.
And you know what? Okay. I was spanked as a child maybe a handful of times, and I turned out pretty good.
You know what? My daughter, Melissa, she used to – when I used to come home at the door, she would meet me at the door with the strap, and she would say, I've been bad. I think I deserve only 3.
Oh, my God.
She would negotiate her being hit.
Great negotiator already, okay? Yeah.
And then she would hug and kiss me after I hit her, and it'd be over. Okay,
yeah, yeah.
So the point is that, yes, it's absolutely true that we are affected by our early childhood. But it is more true that it is not an excuse not to become a successful, productive human being.
Right.
Okay, you could overcome anything and everything knowing that the past affects you but doesn't have to rule you.
Right.
And that is the biggest lie that people tell themselves, that they are doomed by their past.
Right.
Great question.
I mean, you look at people like Steve Jobs and stuff like that, too. They didn't have the greatest wasn't he put up for adoption? Or
oh, yeah. No. He had a – I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
Oh, yeah.
Of people who came out of nothing, who came out of abuse. We have one client now who is a person of color, graduated Harvard Law School. Both his parents – okay, we're crack addicts.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay? We're crack addicts. You know, he was a latchkey kid. Did well in school by himself. Got a scholarship, undergraduate to Columbia, went to Harvard Law School. And he works really, really hard to be a great father. You know what? You could do anything if you're willing to do it.
Absolutely. And it goes the same for people who do have a privileged childhood and just end up doing nothing with their lives because they had everything handed to them and they have no sense of drive or work ethic.
You know, the most depressed people that I treat are the ones that are super wealthy and everything, every little thing bothers them.
Mm.
Okay. And it's because they've never developed a thick skin to problem solve and to realize that pain is not something you get angry at. It's simply part of life that you learn how to use it to make yourself stronger.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I love this quote from Solomon in the book of Proverbs where he says to God, God, don't give me too much that I would forget you or too little that I would curse you. That we need a certain amount of safety in order to grow and a certain amount of pain in order to grow.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and that even for wealthy people, everyone was up in arms about Mick Jagger because he didn't buy his kids houses.
Good.
And he said, you know, he said to him, he said, listen, I gave them an education. I worked like a dog to get to where I am. Let them work.
Absolutely.
And you know what? He's 100% right.
Oh, yeah. My parents helped me out in college. The day I graduated, my dad took the emergency credit card back, and I haven't asked my parents for a dime since because That's all they're obligated to do. And even that is kind to help you with your education. Right. All that a parent's job is to set you on the right path and say, go do it, you know?
Right. And even if they, in fact, can or decide to do more, it should always be met with a degree of gratitude and an understanding of who your child is.
Right. You can't expect those things.
Correct. Meaning to be angry because it's not there is absolutely absurd. If it is there and it doesn't make you a weaker person, then that's fine as well. Because there's no hard, there's no rule in the world that applies to everyone.
Right.
But you know what? It shouldn't be expected.
No, for sure.
What else you got on that list, girl?
What
You're doing
else I
good.
Got? Well,
good questions.
We mentioned before about procrastination, and I am guilty of this. I'll always go, oh, I'll do it later. I'll do it later. And I think that is a lie that people don't even realize they're telling themselves.
It is a lie because here's the way that the reptilian brain, which is the first part of the brain that's formed in every living creature, mm-hmm. it gravitates towards pleasure and it runs from pain. And procrastination is an unconscious belief that which they're avoiding is painful. I don't want to look at my bills. Okay. I don't want to go to the gym.
Oh.
Okay. I don't want to stop smoking. I'm gonna drink less, next month.
Yeah.
Because the drinking covers up a certain degree of pain. So all procrastination is rooted in the avoidance of pain. And some procrastination is rooted in the lack of knowledge of how to organize one's life, and they simply won't ask for directions.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, I love it when I see a guy who's lost, a half an hour. He says, well, real men don't ask for directions. I'm sorry. I will get out of the car in the middle of traffic, wave down a truck driver, and say, where am I going?
Where am I? Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I don't like to get lost. I don't care if he says, what's wrong with you? Yeah, tell me where I am.
Yeah, it's like a real man wears pink, a real man asks for directions.
Exactly. Now I don't have to because of GPS, but
yeah.
I used to always ask for directions.
Yeah, men don't have any shame in using GPS, but they won't ask someone else for directions.
You know what? I ask.
What about, I'm also guilty of this as well, and I think that it's something that's kind of become part of our culture, that we all feel like we need to please everyone, from the person giving us our coffee at Starbucks in the morning. We have to just make everyone feel great and appreciated and put on this facade, like even if you're in a shitty mood, to have people think, oh, that's a nice person.
So let's take a look at that. I appreciate the fact that it is nice to live in a civilized world.
For
it
sure.
is nice to live in a world where people smile, say hello, and greet. But the need to please everyone stems from a fear of rejection rather than a appreciation of civility.
Mm-hmm.
And when you try to please everyone, you end up becoming a very angry, depressed person because you end up putting yourself last.
And you can't vent those feelings because you're the happy-go-lucky person
correct.
All the time.
And sometimes and people who are like that, they say yes when they mean no.
Yeah.
So they'll say, yes, can I borrow $100 and you don't have $100? And they have to borrow $100 to give you $100 and they resent you and they resent themselves. And this is the kind of person who ends up with a tremendous amount of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Saying no is wonderful because all you're doing is there's no such thing as no. All no means is you're saying yes to something else. Do you want to go out with me Saturday night? No. Why? Because I want to be with my friend John, Joe, Jill, Jack.
Right.
Okay. So you're not saying no to them. You're simply saying, on this night, I have a different priority. I'm entitled.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't have to. When someone asks for something, it should always, when someone says, could I ask you a question? My answer is, of course you can. As long as you can deal with my answer, ask away. I don't mind saying no. I say it like I breathe.
Right.
Okay. But if you can't deal with the no, then wait till you can before you ask me the question.
That's a great way of thinking of it. Because I have a no phobia. I'm not the best at saying no, and I'll take things on
Becky,
that I shouldn't do.
Do you like working with me?
I do.
Will you work for nothing?
No.
Oh, there you go. And you had a problem working with Becky, you could say no, darling. Look at that.
Well, speaking of working for nothing, I know people lull themselves into this feeling too, that they feel stuck in a job or stuck in a relationship or a living situation, whatever it has you. People lie to themselves and say, I can't get out of it right now. This isn't a good time to get out of it, even though it's making them miserable.
Right. And here's the lie. The lie is not that I can't, but that I am not willing to pay the price.
Mm-hmm.
A person in my parents' generation, there was very little divorce. You know why? Because everyone was economically petrified of not surviving.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So many people stay in horrible relationships. I can't get out. Why? Because I don't want to take the hit of living, you know, on Madison Avenue, and now I may have to live on First Street.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, let's say, less extreme or more extreme. I don't want to take the hit of living in a really nice house in Jersey to renting an apartment in Jersey.
Right.
Okay. You could always get out of something, but there's a price to pay for everything.
Right.
And rather than complain, you sit down and say, listen, what am I willing to pay the price for? What are my values?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it simply not to cause myself – people have a natural fear of change. So if you're so afraid of change, then no, you're going to stay in a bad situation, but that's your doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's your doing.
Okay. Yeah, you can't blame anyone.
If you have six kids, you created the
you
six
had
kids.
Them, yeah.
Okay? You know, and the best lesson you give to your six kids, if you're in a bad situation, change it.
Because you're the only person who can do that.
Exactly.
You can't sit there going, well, maybe
exactly.
I'll get fired this
right.
week. Maybe
right.
I'll get dumped.
You know, so the excuses, the lies they tell themselves is, what is it going to do to the children? You think children growing up watching fighting every day of their life and seeing people miserable is a better message than saying, if you're in a bad relationship, get out and make yourself happy?
Mm.
I don't think so. Get out and make yourself happy.
Oh, God. Because you deserve it.
Right. You deserve it because you owe it to yourself to be a productive person. And you're not going to be a productive person if you're a miserable person.
Right. Right. Well, on relationships, I think a lot of people lie about to themselves thinking, too, that especially, you know, when I know kids growing up, it's always the stereotype that the products of divorce, sometimes the parents try to buy their affection. And I think it's a common lie that we think material things can equate to real love.
I you're right. And let me explain what that is. What happens is that when you give material things, you're putting a Band-Aid on a problem. You're not addressing it.
Right.
Because children, in fact, they don't want to feel as if they don't have what the other kids have. But more importantly, the reason they bond to their friends who don't give them anything material is they want to feel unique.
Right.
And you take a father or mother who wakes their kids up at 2 in the morning. I used to do this literally almost every night to one of my daughters or the other. And I would wake them up at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, and I would take them out for ice cream sodas or take them to play pool.
Ah.
You know, and this is on a school night. And they would open up about every single issue, problem, because it was so weird.
Mm-hmm.
It was so unusual. And they were the center of the attention. We'd have ice cream sodas and we'd be like, you know, we're doing this on a school night. We're breaking all the rules, or I'm taking them into a place to play pool, and they're 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? My kids are 34 and 30, and still there's probably no one they'd rather be with than me, because I didn't throw money at them.
Right.
I created special experiences.
Right.
You know, and that's the truth. What happens is, when you throw money and then the parent all of a sudden can't throw money and they want to know, why does the kid not talk to me?
Yeah.
Well, you trained him like Pavlov's dog.
Yeah, you taught them that that's what love means.
Exactly. And the moment you don't have the money, there's no more love.
Mm-hmm.
Really sucks.
Yeah. Well, speaking of other things buying love, I know people also confuse sex with love. You know, after 4 years in college, you see a lot of people get their hearts broken after an evening. And
That's a great topic. Okay, so let's go into the word love. What does it mean? When a person says, I love you, all they're actually saying is, I have an emotional response to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I am emotionally connected to you.
Right. You make my eyes dilate.
Exactly.
And my pulse
you
quicken.
Make me do something. Okay? Yeah. And it's a connection. Now, how deep that connection is, how long it will last, what is it based on? Okay, how does it change with changing circumstances is the willingness that you're able to go through the stages of a relationship where there is love, then there is being in love, then there's being out of love, mm-hmm. then there's being committed. There are stages. And if all you're looking to do is be in that in love state, in love, insane, it is a mystical, magical state that doesn't stay over 20, 30, 40 years, everyone will fall out of in love
mm-hmm.
and their love will deepen if they allow it to deepen and they're honest with one another.
Right.
Now, what does sex do? Sex creates, if it's good sex, it creates this emotional oneness, okay,
uh-huh.
where your brain is like, oh my God, this is amazing. Your brain is just saying, you know, sex is a drug.
Mm-hmm.
It works exactly like a drug. And then you look at the person and unconsciously is, you gave me this experience. Oh, my God. Do I love you? If you give me my favorite meal, I love last week. Becky, I love you. Because you gave me something that triggered a deep emotional experience.
Yep.
So the I love you is simply because of what you make me feel.
Right.
But that's a very, very immature love that doesn't last.
Right. But that explains why you see people kind of, they're almost like junkies where they're texting and calling and saying, hey, when am I going to see you again? Hey, remember, we spent that night together. Hey, when can I see you again?
Exactly. Because they want that fix. They want to go back to that feeling.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why relationships that are based solely on sex always die out.
Right.
Because like the drug, you know, after a while, you can't recapture the same feeling.
Right. It runs out.
It's out.
Like the money. It's not a consistent, reliable thing to base a relationship
on. It's like a drug. You do create a tolerance to it. You create a tolerance
yep.
to it. You create a tolerance to sex and to love, which is why people who had the most amazing sex, you know, in the first couple of years and they married 20 years, you ask them, how's your sex life? They'll say, okay. You know, a couple of days ago, I asked a patient, how's your sex life? They're married 32 years. Okay. When was the last time you had sex? 9 years ago.
Oh, my.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You know, they first tried the flub. You know, oh, it was a while. Well, what's a while? I don't really remember. Well, you know, was it like once
nine
a month?
Years, yeah. 2 months.
You know, exactly.
32 days.
It was like 9 years ago. Okay. But when I first asked them how their sex life is, their first answer was, okay, you know.
Mm. Jeez.
Okay, that was their answer.
Well, that leads into my next question, or my next lie, is that people say that sex doesn't change your relationship. And it seems like from what you're saying, it can change both ways, giving it and taking it away from a relationship.
Absolutely. Meaning what happens is because sex is a drug, it always changes a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are exceptions to every rule, but if you have a friendship and you make it sexual, it will change that relationship.
Oh, for okay? sure.
If you have a business relationship and you make it sexual, you're going to change that relationship. And no matter what anyone says, it will change. Now, there are some people who could handle it, but for the most part, it takes away the safety of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you don't allow it to cross a certain line, there's a certain predictability. You are much more vulnerable and much more explosive to the person who you are sexually intimate with.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is why we don't fight with our friends as much as we do with our lovers. So those who say, you know what, it doesn't change, it always changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And unless you really figure out how it's going to change it, you better think twice before you cross that line.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Because people, especially my generation, we don't take it seriously. You know, everybody's – there's this those apps on the iPhone where people are sending, like, naked pictures to each other and sexting at, like, 14, 15 years old, and kids are having sex younger and younger and younger because they think that's what they're supposed to do.
Well, it's also because they think – you're right. They think that's what they're supposed to do.
And they think that's an adult relationship.
Correct. And two, they're also they're also drinking earlier, smoking pot earlier, so they're numbing.
Which is frightening.
So they're numbing themselves out to the resistance, and then what happens is they over emotionalize the sex because it is a drug, and then they're chasing that feeling, and that's why school goes out the window, and the drugs increase, and they're always trying to chase that feeling.
Right.
Okay. And very often with young people, that's how they get approval.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, especially, you know, with the young woman. They get approval because they're great at sex or give a good blowjob, but it is extremely, extremely destructive when that's the nature of why you're engaging in sex as a young person.
Oh, yeah. And that's terrible to think of, like, a 15-year-old thinking, like, what are you good at? Well, I'm good at a blowjob or I'm good at sex. Like, that's terrible. They have their whole life ahead of them. They should be thinking about college and stuff, and all they're thinking about is bumping uglies in the bathroom, you know?
Exactly. And because it is a drug, it begins to perpetuate itself. And like anyone who's addicted to anything, everything else falls by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
So those who are engaged in sex too early or too immaturely, they don't take school seriously. They don't take their responsibilities seriously, and they don't allow themselves to have healthy relationships and healthy friendships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with waiting a little bit and getting to know a person and getting to build a friendship and getting to have some depth of relationship before you jump into something sexual.
Absolutely. That's what makes it worth it, you know? You have to know – when you know about the person and you love the person, then that's makes it so much more meaningful.
Right. Absolutely. You know, so that's something that this younger generation thinks that they're going to get more love by having more sex quickly. In fact, it's always – always the opposite.
Right. Well, it's such an instantaneous culture they have now.
You know, it's an instantaneous culture. They don't get more love. They don't build a friendship, and the relationships don't last.
Mm-mm.
And they go through the numbers, and then they get really hard.
Right.
They get
bullied because they've been with too many people or something.
They get bullied. They pick up a disease, you know, because the young kids don't use condoms the way they should.
Right.
And then now
you get 16-year-olds with gonorrhea. And
or hepatitis C.
Yep.
You know, or herpes, which follows you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a delightful thought.
Yeah, sorry I got on that topic. It just that bothers me so much.
And this, by the way, guys, you know, if young people hear this, this is not about being prudish.
No.
Because I am, it is about what is going to create a really stable relationship. And that is really, you know, looking at a person and seeing them as more than just an object.
Right.
Are you intelligent? Can we talk? Can we experience things together? You know, the longer you allow yourself to grow, and I have this kind of formula, sexual intimacy kills emotional intimacy. Establish the emotional intimacy first.
Right.
And then the sexual intimacy adds to it.
It
doesn't create
just
it.
Just be there,
just
you
be
know?
There. Correct.
Yeah. Thank you for that, because I definitely have wanted to talk about that. It's because it's a prevalent issue, and it's really frightening to see these kids just trying to be adults, and they don't know what they're doing.
And you know what? This is how scary it is. It really starts 10, 11, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kids are having sex literally, you know, when they're babies.
Yeah, it's so sad. It's really scary to think about. But anyway, maybe we'll do another show on stuff like that. I don't know. But
we could do a show on how sex changes in your teenage years, in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And we've had clients who were 70s and 80s who were, you know, still.
Oh, we had Hattie,
absolutely.
First guest.
You know, she's in her 70s chasing 20-year-old guys.
Yeah. 50 dates a week. What was it she had? Oh, my gosh. She was great. You should go listen to our very first episode, Hattie Retro Age.
Listen to our podcast.
But back to our lies. Sorry, I got off topic. But here's a good one. People say that they can change their partner.
You know, that really is an excellent lie. You cannot change anyone. You could influence them if they have respect for you.
Mm-hmm.
You could dialogue with them, but only the person themselves can change themselves if they see they need changing.
Right.
And then if they have the proper coaching of how to make the change.
Mm-hmm.
So many people, and why the divorce rate is so incredibly high, it's because, or even relationships break up, is because the belief is, well, you know what? I'm gonna change this person. You know, I'm gonna make them more responsible.
I'm gonna save this person.
I mean, they're depressed. You know why? When they're with me, they won't be depressed. You cannot change a person. They have to change themselves.
Right.
And anyone who wants to be responsible for another person's behavior, you're looking to be a missionary.
Be a teacher.
If you want to be a missionary, be a missionary.
Yeah.
But don't marry the mission field.
Mm-mm.
So, yes, that's a huge lie we tell ourselves, that if they were with me, they will change. No, they won't.
And it'll just ruin your
exactly.
experiences.
It's like, you know, the guy beat his last three girlfriends, but me, he respects me. He's going to beat you too.
Oh, yeah. What about, it's not what you know, but it's who you know.
I like this lie because, like all lies, they always have a little bit of truth in you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You could know the most influential people in the world, but if you don't have the competency, you're going to develop what is called the imposter syndrome, which is that you know you're a fraud and a phony, and eventually it's going to come out.
Right.
Everything comes out in time. So it's not just who you know. You better know what you know, because someone could give you a job, but if you can't pull it off, you're going to get fired.
Exactly. The who you know can get you the leg up or get you the interview or the audition or whatever, what have you. But at some point, you're going to have to produce those goods.
Exactly. So it's not what you know, it's who you know is a lie. If you say you want to say it the truth, if you know a lot and you know someone who can connect you, you're in a much better shape. That's the truth.
Yeah, for sure. You got to have the goods to back you up.
You have to have the goods. The bullet's got to be in the gun.
What about, this is an interesting one that you brought up, is that people say that they think their mind is too strong to be affected by drugs, by drug use.
Yeah, this is why most people get into drugs, because they say, I'm not an addict by nature.
Right, I don't have an addictive personality.
Drugs, especially those that are so powerful, like crack or methamphetamine, where the mm-hmm. first time you use them, your brain becomes instantly wired, you know, to continually repeat that drug until your life is in shambles.
Yeah.
They have a drug now that is just in Russia. It's called Elephant. I don't think it starts with an E, though. I think with a K, Kelephant. And the drug, within less than a year, your body parts start falling off. Fingers, arms,
legs. Oh, my
legs.
God.
And we see videos, you can go to YouTube, of people taking this drug. They're still taking the drug as their body parts are actually falling off.
Oh, my God.
Okay? And it's the same thing with methamphetamines. Your whole life, you know, your whole moral system, your sense of any human sensitivity to what's right or wrong, drugs will completely wipe out the rational, emotional part of the brain. Now, I'm not talking about having a glass of wine or those, you know, who smoke some marijuana and they're not, you know, they don't have a bad reaction to it. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about
Shooting heroin on the weekends.
Heroin, cocaine. These drugs do change the way your brain fires.
Oh, yeah.
And no matter how strong-willed you think you are, you know what? The drug is stronger.
Definitely. And it's not like a question of, are you, you know, I'm a man or, you know, I'm any less than this. It's a drug. And
exactly.
It's going to change everything about who you were.
Any special forces person will tell you that everyone will eventually break under torture.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as someone who won't break. It's just a matter of when.
Right.
And drugs, you know, harsh drugs will kill everyone and turn you into less than a human being if you let them take their course.
It's just a matter of when, like
just
you said.
A matter of when.
Speaking of a matter of when, Another common one I've heard is I'll eventually be attracted to her or him, and I'll eventually love my partner.
Oh, I like that one. Okay. This is a huge lie. The huge lie is that in relationships, if you were not physically attracted, if something is not going on in your body, okay, when you are with this person and they're just good on paper and you think it's going to come, just because they're such a wonderful person, you're going to end up either divorced or cheating on the person because it doesn't come.
Right.
We have pheromones.
We resent them.
We resent them. We resent ourselves. We get angry. We start punishing them. Mm-hmm. We are chemically aware of another person. We have pheromones under the tongue that when you kiss a person, when you're near a person, smell, just simple connection. If you are not physically turned on by another person, it is good to keep it as a friendship, and it is a nightmare to turn it into a marriage.
Oh, God. Yeah. There's more to it than just being partners. You have to have that spark.
Right. If you think it's going to come with years, the only thing that's going to come with years is you're going to really be settling and looking elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, the only thing that comes with time is wrinkles and saggy boobs.
Right. Well said.
All right, here are my last couple. I know we're pushing on time, and Dr. Gluck has people to see. But it's only a white lie. I hear that a lot.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know where we got the color white lie. Okay, you know. Now, let me explain. We talked a little bit about what a lie is, and let's talk about what a lie is not.
Okay.
Okay. A lie is lie by definition. My definition, Gluck's definition, is when you tell someone something in order to gain an unfair advantage.
Mm-hmm.
An unfair advantage. If a autistic girl, you know, 5-year-old girl came up to you and says, "Aren't I pretty?" And you say, "You are absolutely gorgeous." No, you're not lying to her. You're not trying to get an unfair advantage. You're just trying to bring some pleasure. You know, so is that a white lie? In my mind, that is not a lie at all.
Right.
Okay. But if you tell, you know, your partner, you said, you know, "I was home last night and you were out drinking with the boys." You know what? It is not a white lie. It's a lie.
Right.
Because it breaks down the credibility of can you be trusted. And when trust goes, so do feelings, emotions, intimacy, sexual connection. Everything goes. So white lies that kill trust are not white lies. They're lies.
But on the flip side of that, my last one for you, is honesty the best policy?
Ah, now here, this is the beauty of we live in a world where you have to know who you're talking about. So doing this for so many years, let me tell you this interesting story. I have this couple who came to me. Now, this is over 25 years ago. They were people of color. He was a surgeon, and she was a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
He was a thoracic surgeon. And they were married, had three kids, and very religious. Okay, they were evangelicals.
Mm-hmm.
And he was caught up in an accident where he had 36 hours of surgery.
Okay,
He had to do, you know, with the team and blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the surgery, he kissed one of the nurses who was assisting him, who really helped save this person's life.
Mm-hmm.
He felt so guilty. Now, he knows his wife is, you know, more religious than he is, really strict. He ran to home to tell his wife what happened, and she divorced him.
Oh, my God.
She divorced him. Three kids destroyed. He was destroyed. She had a nervous breakdown. Did he need to tell her that? No.
Right.
Okay. No. Because he was only doing it to get it off his chest.
Sometimes okay? That's
and sometimes,
selfish,
you know what?
Yeah.
You don't get something off your chest if you're going to destroy another person.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, no. There are times when honesty is not the best policy. Because you're not planning on being a continual sneak. You realize you made a mistake. Let it be your mistake. You suffer. You don't make everyone else suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's where honesty becomes not the best policy.
Well, Dr. Gluck, thank you so, so much for doing this.
You know what? I love this. We're going to have to do this more often.
Yeah, I love these shows with you.
Thank you, Becky.
Thanks, Dr. G.
Bye, baby.
Thank you again, Dr. Gluck, for taking the time to sit down with me. We have a blast doing these shows for you. So if there's anything that you want us to do a show about or something that you want to share, give us a call at the office. It's 212-599-3195 or shoot us an email at gluckradio@gmail.com. As always, please find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter, and follow us. We've got a lot of exciting things for you to check out. Visit us at gluckradio.com. Tell your friends. Till next time.